Hi everyone, it's Alice Worsley here. Looking forward to sharing the next 25 minutes with you on Planet FM with two very special guests. In fact, I met them both a number of years ago when I was on another radio station, and it was delightful when they walked in today. They'd actually got vague memories of having met me before, and their names are Elizabeth and Charles Handy. And welcome to both of you today. It's so lovely of you to join me. Thank you very much. Now, I'm sure that a lot of you will know Charles for a number of his books over the years. His latest book is called The Elephant and the Flea, which I thought was a wonderful title. But you may remember The Age of Unreason, The Empty Raincoat, Gods of Management, Waiting for the Mountain to Move, Beyond Certainty, The Changing Worlds of Organizations. And Charles has been in his time an oil executive. He's also been an economist, but he's well known as a writer and a broadcaster. And Charles, your books over the years focus on the coming changes to work and life in modern society. And I wondered how far back that interest in these kind of things began for you.
Well, it began because I ended up, after working for an oil company, I started teaching at a business school. And I was teaching about organizations and how to run them. And I gradually began to realize that organizations were changing and that they weren't going to be the dominant feature in everybody's life forever like they used to be. I called last century the century of the organizations, and the organization man and now the organization woman. And I began to see that people were going to leave organizations, and that was going to have a big impact on society. And technology was allowing people to be almost organizations in their own right, working from their own homes or from their own cars even, you know. And I thought, I'll start working and writing about what's happening in society at large, the kinds of education we need, what this is going to do to home life, what we're going to say to our children. You know, the world is not going to be the same as it was when I grew up. And in this book, I've actually used my life as a sort of thread to look at the world as it was and as it will be, you know.
It must be quite fascinating for you, because some of the books you wrote, and you start in the beginning of this book, The Elephant and the Flea, about the morning you woke up in 1981 and you had basically given up work as such, and you were going to go out on your own into portfolio work, as you called it. But it was interesting that back then, say in 1981, a lot of people would have said, oh, you must be joking, it's going to stay the same, work won't change, you know. But it has, hasn't it?
Yeah, joking, they said, you must be mad, actually. I mean, I was predicting then that half the people in Britain by the end of the century, 20 years' time, wouldn't be working full-time in an organization. And they said, half the people won't be? And I said, yeah, they'll be independent, they'll be part-timers, they'll be, you know, temporary workers, they'll be, you know, boozing in and out of work and so on. And it happened. It happened in 1999 in Britain.
Right.
And it's probably like that very nearly now in New Zealand. An awful lot of independent people I notice around.
Including myself.
Yeah, you're a flea, you're a flea.
I'm a flea, there
That's
we
right,
go.
Absolutely.
But why did it change, though? Why did we leave behind the security of the solid organizations and concepts in our head, because I trained as a school teacher, of you've got a job for life?
Well, we just didn't need so many people, you know. I mean, we now need half as many people to produce three times as much as we did about 10 years ago. And when I joined Shell, we had twice as many people as the British Army in that company. Now we've got half as many.
So it has, as you say, it has changed immensely over the years, to the point now where, you know, we're in the early 2000s, and it has changed even more. I mean, what if people are finding half of the workforce is basically not working in the traditional roles? Are there a lot of people, though, who aren't working at all because they can't find work anymore?
Well, that's right, and they call themselves retired or something, but we won't be able to go on like that, I mean, because people won't have enough money. We're going to live for about 25 years after we stop working in an organization, even if it's a smaller one, and we've got to do something, and we will have to create our own work. We'll have to become self-employed in some way and become mini-enterprises, you know, brand oneself somehow, as you've done.
So you've got to see what your strengths are, I guess, and play to those.
Everybody's got some strength. Everybody's got some talent. They need help to find what it is, and then they need help to sell it. I'm hopeless at actually managing my own business. Thank goodness I've got Elizabeth by my side here, you know, who's my manager, as well as being a great photographer and artist and all sorts of other things. And I need that because I was brought up never to ask for money. I was brought up never to say no. I was brought up to always be at the disposal of other people. That's no good if you want to make a success of your life.
It's also a very stressful workforce we have now. Just thinking of it over the years, and I've been in radio, which is probably one of the more stressful industries, where, you know, you can lose your job just like that. And that happened a lot earlier than a lot of people. But the words now like retrenchment and redundancy are so much part of our everyday lives.
Well, it's inevitable. Technology means you can take the work out of the organization and give it to other people to do for you. Technology means that very few people can do the work that a lot of people used to do. We just don't need them. And technology means that smaller organizations rapidly get swallowed up by bigger organizations and say, oh, well, we don't need you. We just need your client list, or we just need your little technology, or we just need your studio. But we provide all the content. Thank you very much.
Yes.
And tough luck and goodbye. And organizations are very ungrateful places. You can work for them for 20 years. And 2 weeks later, they've forgotten you were there.
Exactly. That is so. And a lot of people feel very hurt by that because they've built up a sense of loyalty towards the company or organization they work for. And then suddenly they realize that they just weren't important to them at all. And it can be quite traumatic for people when they realize they're not valued.
Just a cost, actually,
yes,
in the end. And that's why it's so much better once you can establish yourself as you're an independent person. Then you are valued for what you are. And people actually, clients are much nicer people to relate to than employers.
That's all dependent on the fact that you have got something, I guess, that people want, isn't it? If you don't, then either you end up doing perhaps menial work or you become unemployed.
Well, that's right. Or you can work for Elephants, but on a very part-time kind of basis.
So the Elephant is the organization as such?
That's right.
Yeah.
The Elephants are the bigger organizations, and fleas need elephants.
Yes.
I mean, my books wouldn't exist if it wasn't for the elephant called Random House that publishes them, but on the other hand, I don't work for Random House. I'm outside.
Yes.
They pay me a sort of sum in advance, what they call an advance against royalties, and I actually work for an income, part of the income stream that my books produce. But I need them. Mm-hmm. I ride on the backs of them. Now, of course, other people do that in different ways. People drive cars for them. People might come in and do the catering for them and so on. So we all need elephants, actually, but we don't have to be employed by them.
Mm.
Instead of being employed as a chef by an organization, you're an independent chef, and you come in and you deliver meals for a fee. It's a better relationship, I think.
Do you think that people need to be educated in this way of thinking, though? Because a lot of us aren't, are we? And so it is a great shock when we are made redundant, and suddenly we don't know what to do. We're scrambling to find a job, find some sort of income.
I mean, my books are meant as a wake-up call, actually.
Yes.
I write about what's going to happen. And say, you may not like this. I'm not saying this is the best of all possible worlds, but I promise you it's going to happen, and we better prepare for it. Yes, our schools need to change dramatically, I think. Our parents need to change, and they ought to be telling us these things.
Do you see too, Charles, I wonder, I mean, like in 1981 or before, when you started to see the way things were going, and by 1999 it had happened, do you now also see further changes down the track? I mean, is it going to change yet again in, say, the next 10, 20 years?
Well, I think what's going to happen is the big organizations are going to become the training schools for life, in a way. We'll join them for 10 to 15 years and we'll learn skills. One or two of us, so 10% actually, will stay on to manage the things because we need them to be managed. And the rest of us, having learned a trade or a skill, whether it's been broadcasting or whatever, or catering or, I don't know, it might be some form of technology, we'll move out and form our own little organizations or join tiny organizations which will then serve as the elephants. So we're all going to have to live as fleas, as I call it, for a large part of our lives. And we've got to be prepared for that. We've got to educate ourselves for that. We've got to learn about networking. We've got to learn about selling ourselves, pricing ourselves, looking after our own accounts, all this sort of stuff. And actually, what I'm saying is that that's frightening in a way.
Yes.
But also, once you're in it, once you're in that sort of cold bath and start swimming, it's much more exciting.
It really is. Are there many companies or organizations, though, who look at the way things have changed and are actually saying we value the worker and are putting in place strategies to make the workplace a better place for the employees?
They've got to do that anyway, because they will want to keep you for 15 years if you're any good at all. And some people they want to keep for longer, not everybody. And if they're not careful, because it is easy outside if you've got skills, the best people will leave.
Yes.
And we'll end up with the elephants being run by the second raters, and that's what we don't want. So the enlightened employers are treating people as independents, as individuals, and not as human resources. I mean, I was in my oil company, I was MKR stroke 42, not Charles Handy. And that doesn't work at all.
No.
And if I'm Charles Handy, I want to be allowed to be Charles Handy, to have a space to move myself around, to make a contribution, to express my views, to disagree with people, you know, to come up with ideas and not be squashed, all that sort of stuff. And the best employers are doing that. But even so, they will need fewer people age 45.
I know. And that is the thing, as you hit the 40s, you realize, can't we change this though, Charles? Can't we have a better value placed on, and we're going to talk with Elizabeth and you in a moment on being 60, but can't we somehow put in place where the experience of those 40 and up is valued more, that it's not just a young person's world?
Oh, I think so, and I think they will be valued, because a lot of people will then be brought back on the outside of the elephants for their wisdom role. What I think will happen is that we'll be valued by organizations for our energy role as full-time employees, but then we will be valued for our wisdom roles. But you don't need wisdom around all the time.
Yes.
So they said to a friend of mine, you know, we want to keep you on, John. We need your ideas, your experience, your wisdom, but only on Tuesdays, John.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's going to be
a hard lesson for us all to, learn, isn't it?
It's going to be difficult, but it also allows us to take more control of our lives, you know, to balance the work at home with the work in the workplace, and to have more fun, quite honestly. Mm. I mean, the real way to enjoy life is to do what you want to do and find somebody who'll pay you for doing it.
Yes, indeed.
Turn your pleasure into a business. You know?
Which I think is a wonderful idea. Charles, just before Elizabeth joins us, I wanted to talk about the significance of September the 11th on the way we live as well as the way we work, because that too must have changed things.
Well, it had a shock effect in America, of course, on people's lives, and a lot of people said, you see what happens if you get to the office too early. Mm. And I'm not trying to joke. I mean, they really said that, and they said, gosh, you know, there are more important things in life than work, and I must make sure that I think again about what my life is about and what success means and so on. I have a horrible feeling it didn't last very long in America, but I've noticed in New Zealand, where I've been for the last 10 days, that it had a longer lingering effect here, actually, with people saying, you know, life is about living,
yes,
not just about working.
And I think as terrorism has got closer with the Bali bombings and all the possible threats that are still out there for Down Under, I guess we are still feeling quite vulnerable. So it makes us relook at the way we live our lives and the way we work.
And the fact that it may stop at any moment for our lives. So let's make the most of it while we're here. You know.
And if you reach 60, Elizabeth, or beyond, then indeed you are very blessed these days, I think. And Elizabeth joins us now. And Elizabeth, you're a portrait photographer, among many things. You've written a couple of books, which we won't talk about today, but I wanted to talk about the book that you have done with Charles called Reinvented Lives, Women at 60, a Celebration.
That's right.
Was it your idea?
Well, it's funny you forget how ideas come about, but we went to a friend's birthday party, and she was celebrating her 60th birthday. And she was having such a great time. She was doing the tango with her husband, and everybody around were talking about the future and what they were going to do and everything. And I was coming up to be 62, and we just thought, well, let's find out more about this. You know, what are other people? Is everybody, this is a good time being 60. And so we found 28 different women from different backgrounds.
Are these all British women?
They're all British, but some are from Indian backgrounds. I mean, they're all British subjects, but they come from different backgrounds, different ethnic groups, you know, different educational groups. We wanted them to be very diverse, so anybody who reads a book will be able to identify with one of them.
Right.
They all tell their own story.
Now, they literally wrote their own story about their lives?
Yes, Charles had the job of editing them. Quite a job.
Well, it's always tough. We said to them, write the history of your life in 1,500 words, you know, ending up with what it feels like to be 60. Mm. And some did it, but many, of course, couldn't do it in 1,500 words. So for the book to be of reasonable size, I had to cut it down a bit, which was tough to do, cutting into people's lives, you know.
Indeed it is. About,
yes. So what was the overall feeling? I mean, was there a positivity about being 60? Because I think of my parents' generation and beyond that, where you regarded 60 as, well, you know,
getting old. That's
very
right.
Old, I yes.
Know. Well, you just have to look at photographs in the book and you see the women. You know, they look pretty good.
Yes.
And
about 40.
They do. I mean, I
and they've got
my
sparkling eyes. Yes. They've got energy. And I think the great thing, speaking for myself anyway, I'm now 62, is that as you get older, you do gain confidence. Your kids, if you've had them, have grown up. You've got more time. You've got more choices. You've maybe done a couple of careers. And now's the time to invest in yourself. And also it's a time when a lot of your friends are getting ill or dying and you realize, you know, this is not the dress rehearsal, it's the real thing. You've got to get on with life and not waste any time.
And they all had another dream, you know, that that they could do. I mean, one of them is Prue Leith, who is famous in London for a cookery school and a restaurant and so on. And I mean, yeah, she had achieved an enormous amount, as well as having a husband and kids and all the rest of it. But there was another dream there, which only surfaced when she sold her cookery school at 60, and a counsellor persuaded her to release her dream, which was to write some novels.
Right.
Which she did. Amazingly, you know. I mean, she'd never written anything before, and they're wonderful novels, very saucy.
Yes. She's too long behind the and too long in the kitchen, obviously.
Yes, that's right.
She needed to release some of that energy there.
Yes, she said she was terribly worried that her children would be shocked, but they were worried that her husband would be shocked.
Now, you say that the book is called Reinvented Lives, so obviously the other women too, like Prue Leith, have changed their life somehow at 60, whether it's perhaps pursuing another career or finding their bliss and enjoying their very, very
yes.
everyday
their
lives.
Or yes. Enjoying their friends more, that's another thing.
And some, you know, they all got married pretty early, as they did in those days, because that was the way you lived with people. You got married to them,
yes.
And then
yes.
you had children. So a lot of them didn't really enjoy their life, their youth, you know. So one of them had a gap year at 60.
Went off around the world for a year. Can you imagine it?
Backpack on back, you know, youth hosteling, doing the Indian thing, the Nepal thing, the Thailand thing, and the New Zealand and Aussie thing, you know, on the hippie trail, and reliving her youth and having a wonderful time, waking up in the morning with no idea of what she'd be
doing.
No
plans.
The kinds of things that irritate us and our children.
Exactly, that's right. So did you feel by the time you'd finished talking with them, reading their stories, filming them, photographing them, that there was a great sense of optimism, that there was while the reality is you are getting older?
I think so, yes. I mean, a lot of them have gone through divorces or, you know, the person whose birthday party we went to 6 months later, her husband left after 40 years of marriage. So a lot of them have gone through illnesses, had cancer, had strokes. And, you know, it's not as if they haven't had hard times, but they feel they've got through it. They
yes.
can cope. I yes. think that's they found strengths within themselves they probably didn't know they had. Mm-hmm. So on the whole, it is a positive book.
None of them mention retirement, as men would do.
So they're still going strong.
They're still going strong.
And they don't talk about dying or anything, so they're full of bounce, actually. Mm. I mean, I was quite daunted by meeting them and
so
what they plan to do.
Which is wonderful, isn't it? And they're obviously, I think there may be another book for, you know, when we get to 70, because I think we're going to find that the baby boomer generation coming through is going to push the boundaries of being old. At least 10 years back.
I think so,
you know, that what we regarded perhaps as 70 as being old, now we'll look at 80 perhaps when we might finally give up doing a few things
in
life.
I think people start boasting when they get to 90 these days.
Yes. And tell me, taking their photographs must be had been a very interesting experience to capture
wonderful.
The essence of these women.
That's right, yes, because I'm passionate about taking photographs. And to have the chance to do 28 different photographs. In fact, 28 times 2, because I've taken 2 pictures and the close-up, which shows their personality and look deep into their eyes, and the other one in their environments, which tells you about their lives, which is like a story. And that was great fun, because we would ask each person where they wanted to be photographed and how they wanted to be photographed. So again, that's going into their lives, and they had to think about that themselves too.
Well, they're two wonderful books, and I thank you for sharing them with me today. Charles's book is called The Elephant and the Flea, New Thinking for a New World, and the book by Elizabeth and Charles Handy with wonderful photography and the story of women's lives is called Reinvented Lives, Women at 60, A Celebration. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure to catch up again.
Wonderful to be with you again.
Thank you.